This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh, Sue, I'm finally feeling like I'm coming out of the jet lag. I was really struggling even earlier today before the show. I had to warn everyone. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to make it very well, but I feel a lot better than I did certainly earlier. This trip really kind of whacked me a little bit with the jet lag. And part of the reason was, like, when I came back on Wednesday, we left Athens at, like, I think it was 12:30. So I'm used to being up during the day. I didn't want to go to sleep on the airplane when it was the afternoon, but then that catches up with you.
It does.
One of the things that was fascinating, though, you know, on this trip, look, I was with some folks who were from Minnesota. Our next guest, David Strom, who is the associate editor of hotair.com, is with us. My friend Mike Kenny, who is with Defined Destinations, is going to join us a little later. We're going to wrap up the Greece trip. But David, I wanted to share some of my stories from afar with the international coverage. How are you this afternoon?
Well, I haven't been in a musical called Greece like you have.
Well, I had a great trip. And what's interesting is I was with some communists from Minnesota. And I bet Mike's listening right now, so I just wanted to make this impression, because the thing that I'm trying to convince my lefty friends of, don't take my word for anything, right? But the media coverage is full of you-know-what. It's biased. They're not accurate. Just look at what Yuri Berliner said about NPR, right? Look at what, I would say David Zweig's new book, An Abundance of Caution, highlights a lot of media stuff as well. I've been reading from afar. I've been reading your columns. There's a lot of media nonsense that's still going on right now in this country where there's misrepresentation of reality.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the themes that I keep on trying to hit is that if you read or watch or listen to the mainstream media, they have a narrative, and that narrative, is driven by an ideological predisposition, and it just gets repeated over and over again. It sort of originates from what I call the transnational elite, which is why you saw the exact same narrative in Europe, orange man bad, what we really need to do is hand power over to this, technocracy that understands how the world should be run better than us. And it just sort of trickles down into everything. And we saw it during COVID. We see it, in the coverage of Trump. We saw it in the coverage of Joe Biden, Mr. Sharp as a tack. It's just sort of this constant repetition of a series of themes of things that they want you and the rest of everybody to believe.
Well, and I mentioned David Zweig, and you wrote a column that kind of referenced David Zweig in his new book, An Abundance of Caution, because wasn't someone at NPR even maybe tackled this?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. In fact, what was hilarious about that conversation, because it was actually a fairly long conversation with David Zweig, and he was talking about how if you watched or listened to the mainstream media, you had the most, not the least, but the most misinformed and erroneous notion of what was going on with COVID. And, you know, it, on the one hand, you could say, well, great, NPR finally covers the fact that NPR and everybody else lied to the American people, shaped the narrative. But on the other hand, you know, it's just, you know, oh, well, we didn't do that at NPR. You know, we gave you a much more refined and true view of things. When in fact, all they were doing was, you know, essentially repeating the press releases from Fauci and the CDC.
Yeah. So like in this case, and this is, and David was a guest a couple of weeks ago, but in this interview with NPR, he says that what I'm trying to, you know, explain is that we were living in a very misinformed sort of media bubble in much of the United States. And the host says, OK, so you actually said three really important things here. What we believed to be was happening was not what we were being told. This was specific to certain parts or certain media bubbles in the United States. Those are, she says, so you are saying that outside those particular bubbles, and you can identify them in a minute, people had more accurate sense as to what was going on. He says, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But what I think she doesn't realize is that NPR was one of those bubbles.
Oh, absolutely. And she implicitly admits that because she said that she wanted to cover Jay Bhattacharya's Great Barrington Declaration, which was signed by tens of thousands of scientists, which basically laid out the fact that we were approaching COVID incorrectly. And there was nothing ideological about it. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the primary authors were from Stanford, Harvard, and Oxford University. And she said, well, I wanted to cover this in a rigorous way and see, you know, the pluses and minuses of what they were saying. And my colleague said, well, you can't do that because you'd be spreading misinformation. And, of course, the misinformation was just a disagreement with what Anthony Fauci was saying. That was their definition of, you know, the truth was whatever was told to them by the government.
Yeah.
And if you, I mean, if you think about how the media presents itself as the people who hold power accountable, and then look at what they do, which is just repeat whatever the powerful say. It's such a disconnect.
Well, and then I know that you kind of highlighted this because I don't know if it was David or the host from NPR, you know, lays out the information about what was going on. And they say something about the information was basically ignored in America. And you rightly said not ignored. It was suppressed. Right. It was suppressed.
Oh, absolutely. And what's striking is as awful as many things in Europe are in terms of the information sphere, you know, if you go back and you take a look, what we saw in the United States was an active suppression, not just of what scientists here in the United States were saying, but you know, the kinds of conclusions that the European medical institutions. And so we're not talking about, you know, wacky conspiracy theorists. We're talking about, you know, what the French, what the British, what the Swedish were saying was the right way to deal with this. I mean, for, you know, it was in 2020, late 2021, when the UK, France, Britain, Germany, Sweden all said, do not give the vaccine to children. In fact, you shouldn't give it to anyone under 60 without, you know, some serious medical condition, because the costs, the dangers are greater than the benefits. And to this day, in the United States, if you question giving the vaccine to a six-month-old baby, you are called a vaccine
right.
skeptic. And so if you live within that media bubble, you are being lied to. You know, we 10 years from now, they're all going to pretend like it was just a few people who got it wrong. But in fact, it was the mainstream media that collaborated with our government to systematically lie to people about what was known.
David, you know this. It's outrageous what happened. And if I would have one hope for any of my friends, you know, I mentioned this yesterday. My sister, God bless her, she's awesome. She stayed at my house with my daughter for a few days of the trip. We had help from one of my wife's aunts as well. But she sends me a text one morning. She goes, I think your TV's going to blow up. I have MSNBC on. And look, I'm not going to start trouble with my sister when she's helping me out. But I wanted to say, you have no idea. And what I want to do, and I don't know how this would be received, I want to buy her David Zweig's book and say, just read this. Don't take my word for it. Look what David Zweig, who's no conservative, is saying about what the media did in this country. It is one of the biggest scandals that's ever occurred.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was and I don't want to get all conspiracy theory here, but essentially what happened was, you know, Pfizer, shovels a lot of money to the CDC. The CDC tells everyone to take Pfizer's vaccine, and anybody who questions that is slander.
Well, here, let me give you a real life example. I've told this story before. So in the beginning of that summer, that would have been the summer of 21, the vaccine starts to roll out right around the end of May, June, I think, right? And some of us, I remember saying something really stupid. I'm embarrassed to this day. I said, this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, because we were convinced, we were told that the vaccine was going to prevent you from even giving COVID to someone else, right? So none of that turned out to be accurate. I'm actually doing live commercials, live spots for the vaccine, because I thought that was the right thing to do at the time. Man, was I wrong. So, but what was interesting is I realized in the middle of the messaging, this was toward the end of July, that what I was being told to say was not true. So I go back and I try to work with the people who were representing, and this was coming through the state of Missouri, you know, and through the federal government. I said, guys, I can't keep saying this. This is a lie. I'm telling people things that are not true. Well, they got all bent out of shape like I was doing something wrong, and I was shocked by that, because the messaging was inaccurate. It was horribly wrong. And there was no attempt to change it, except for someone like me that raised his hand and said, wait a second, guys, this is not something that should be happening.
Well, I'll give you an example from my home state. A few months ago, the person who ran our Health and Human Services COVID response was pushing vaccines and telling everyone you've got to do this and it's perfectly safe. She did an interview and she had a vaccine injury and reported it to the CDC back in 2021. Never told anyone about it. And it took 2.5 years for the CDC to get back to the person who was in charge of Minnesota's response to COVID to figure out what happened specifically to her. And so, you know, and she's talking about this like very casually. She says, well, I got a blood clot and it was life threatening. And I wanted to make sure the people at the top knew that this happened to me. So we're not talking about a skeptic. We're not talking about anyone who was in any way, shape or form pushing against the federal government's response. We're talking about one of the most liberal pro-vaccine people. And even she was blown off, and she never told anybody until it was in the rearview mirror. Yeah. That's how much we were lied to.
Yep, I agree with that for sure. David Strom from hotair.com. Okay, so here's something that is separate maybe but related. And I've been trying to follow this story from afar, and I was very confused because I think a lot of us on our side of politics were somewhat critical, certainly at the beginning of John Fetterman from Pennsylvania. We didn't really get what he was all about. He was recovering from the stroke. It didn't seem like he was in good shape at the time. But then he started leaning a little bit on some issues in our direction. I would say on the common sense issues, right? So then the New Yorker does this story that I think is basically a hit piece on John Fetterman. And what Tom Bevin at Real Clear Politics said, I think, is very, very interesting. And you highlighted this in one of your columns. The Associated Press goes out there. They do a headline that says, Senator John Fetterman raises alarms with outbursts at meeting with union officials, AP sources say. Tom justifiably and correctly says the Associated Press went all of Biden's presidency without even printing a headline that said his behavior behind the scenes raised alarms. They never even brought up that one time. But of course, New Yorker does a hit piece on Fetterman, and they're all going to roll with it, right?
Oh, well, and what's hilarious about this is that if you go back and you take a look at how Amy Klobuchar, who is one of the most highlighted people among the left, her behavior behind the scenes, as the New York Times told it during when she was running for president, is far worse than anything said about John Fetterman today. And all of that information came from a radical pro-Hamas person who worked for him, which just highlights again that there's a narrative. They have decided that they want to get rid of John Fetterman. And so you've had six full days of stories talking about Fetterman, who is clearly, in far better shape than he was when he ran for office. I mean, he could barely speak in 2022, and we were told he was perfectly fine. Now that he's basically recovered, but he's no longer on board with the left-wing progressive agenda, they're trying to kick him out by calling him, mentally deranged.
So Selena Zito is going to be on my show on Monday talking about this because she's in Pennsylvania. I know you know who Selena is. And she said this. The only time I, as a reporter, I saw Fetterman, not himself, not just regarding his health, was when he was recovering and other people were handling his messaging. During that time, I was the most critical of Fetterman's candidacy. However, nearly all that criticism was due to a stunning lack of transparency from his staff. And here's what John Fetterman says today, I think.
Hey, it was a hit piece, a one-source hit piece, announced some anonymous sources, so there's nothing new.
Why?
What would you say, Senator, to people that are concerned about you?
They're actually not concerned. It's a hit piece.
They're not concerned. It's a hit piece. The audio a little tough to hear there, but that's what I was wondering, because I'm reading this from afar. I'm like, oh, we got people that work with John Fetterman. They're saying he's not stable. It does seem like a hit piece.
Oh, it absolutely is a hit piece, which, again, what it shows you is what they tell you, what they say is entirely based upon, what they want you to think and what their ideological commitments are. I will, to this day, stand by my judgment that in 2022, Fetterman should not have been elected. Because it looked very much at the time that his recovery was very much in question.
I'm with you. I was right there as well.
And it really wasn't about his ideology or anything else, although I would have voted against them. It really was, well, look, this guy is not healthy. Well, he's mostly recovered. And the left was 100% behind him then, and they're 100% against him now, not based upon his health, which is what they claim, but based upon whether he's ideologically reliable. And, basically you just have to assume that anything you're told by people within what I call the Pravda media and the establishment is based upon what they want you to believe, and that is only coincidentally connected to the truth.
Go. And here, let's offer another example, one more story, because if I was here earlier this week, I would have hammered this one, and I had Scott Jennings on yesterday, and he did highlight it, but I think this is one of the bigger stories of the week, and I also think it hasn't been covered hardly at all. You have this Gaza aid pier that we spent $230 million on, 20 days in use. Now we find out it didn't really do anything, and 60-plus U.S. soldiers were hurt in the process of all this. I mean, talk about a boondoggle, but do you see the AP headline on that anywhere?
Well, and, you know, that, well, of course not. First of all, just again, it didn't fit the narrative. And second of all, their excuse is, well, nobody told us this, as if the goal of the mainstream media is simply to print press releases from the government.
Right, right.
You know, they tell us, well, we need to have, you know, a free press because we're the people who hold the government accountable. It's like they do exactly the opposite. They just print whatever they're told from the Democratic Party.
Yeah, there's no skepticism. I mean, I went to journalism Yep. school. That was part of being a journalist and a reporter, being skeptical. Don't believe all this stuff. But the opposite is happening in the American media. David Strom, it's always great to have you on. I hope all is well up there in Minnesota. I actually was on the trip with some folks from your state, and one of them is going to join me next because we had a lovely, lovely listener trip to Athens and beyond all the Greek islands. Have you been, David Strom?
I have not, and I really resent that you did not invite me and pay for my trip.
Well, we're going to consider that next year. You're going to come on board. I think we might go to Croatia. But Strom, thank you very much, Dave. We'll talk soon.
Sounds great.
We'll see you. Yeah, Mike Kenny's going to come up. We took a group of listeners, and I thought it'd be nice to kind of decompress with Mike and maybe a little hint about an upcoming trip. We'll see.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I have a Friday audio cut of the day coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Let me see if Fred has left any notes. I do know that Selena Zito is going to join us on Monday. I'm very interested in hearing her take on Fetterman. And I know we got other fun. Oh, this is great, too, because Chris Klemm is going to be with us. Yeah, Fred reminded me of this. So Chris Klemm is awesome on the border. He's a former border control agent. We used to have him on all the time. You might remember that. He really calls balls and strikes on the immigration issue probably better than anyone out there except for Tom Holman. Well, Chris went to work for like a limited period with the administration. I mean, I've told people this, and you know, Brian Kilmeade shared this a couple weeks ago. We literally lost seven people that were regulars like General Kellogg and others on the show to the administration. Brian said they lost 16 at Fox, mainly because there were some behind-the-scenes people as well. But Chris sent Fred a note, and it's awesome because we had a great relationship with him. He's going to come on in the 5 o'clock hour. Before we get out of here today, and I'm still, you know, I made it very clear as we headed into the roundtable, if you missed it, it was a pretty damn good one. John Lamping, Jeff Smith, Jane Duker, all on the panel. But I'm probably hit with jet lag here, worse than I ever have been coming back from a trip. That was awesome, but I wanted to kind of tie it all together with my friend Mike Kenny, who is our tour guide with Defined Destinations. I've known Mike now for about 15 years. How is your jet lag? Let me start with that question here this afternoon.
Jet lag? No, I'm doing well. You need to go ride your bike or something, Mark. Come on.
Dude, I'm telling you, I didn't sleep at all, and then I didn't sleep very much on Wednesday night. I still was struggling last night. This has hit me a little bit harder than I'm used to. Oh, and then my wife got sick. She has COVID. I don't know if I told you that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So, unfortunately, she's suffering from that. But look, let's focus on the positive. We have some of the listeners I know listening right now. Larry was texting me. He was on the trip. We had a fantastic voyage with 97.1 FM Talk listeners. You had a couple of friends from Minnesota that were along. I had a couple of friends from Las Vegas. Mike, it was magical. It was magical, and I knew it would be.
Yeah, it was great. Again, your listeners that joined us, what a great group of people. We had a blast, so open-minded, just loved having every moment with them. What a great group down there.
Well, I know that you could put this into perspective. Sue is next to me right now. So, Sue, we arrive in Athens, and everybody is, that first day, we go to Naplio, Mike. And Naplio was just amazing. I don't even know how to describe where it was. I think it is technically east, maybe even southeast of Athens, a really, really beautiful village. But then we come back and we're supposed to get on this cruise liner. And it's a very small ship. That was part of the selling point, 197 passengers. I go up to Mike's room on the Wednesday night. We're supposed to take off and set sail. Now, a little background. There were high winds that we were dealing with that were crazy. But we had thought, at least I had thought, they were going to die down. So Mike says, Mark, I have bad news. We're not going to be able to leave the port until Friday night at 8 o'clock.
Holy
this was
cow.
This was Wednesday night at 6 or 7 o'clock. Would you like to describe what my reaction was at that time?
Cursing?
Panic.
I don't know if I can. Your face, like, it was like the world was coming to an end. And I'm like, Mark, I told you, you cannot tell the guests this because your face was horrible.
Right,
I needed to tell them themselves. And they were just a bunch of troopers. And, you know, we were stuck in Athens for a little longer. And I think it worked out really, really well. But, yes, your face, I can't tell you anything first because it looked disturbing.
Yeah, he's like, look, dude, we got to work on the body language. I'm like, I don't know if I can. I feel like I'm letting people down. But to your point, everyone realized that, well, first of all, if we were out there with 40 to 50 mile an hour winds, we'd be dead right now because those were crazy winds. So the captain of the ship had to do, you know, the right thing. And we get out there finally a couple of days later. But we front-loaded it, right? Because we were supposed to see a little bit more of like the Acropolis and the Parthenon before the cruise. We just did it, or I'm sorry, after the cruise, we just did it before, so we just reversed it.
Well, that's great,
yep,
then.
Exactly.
It worked out fine. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Ethan is pointing out, if you're watching on the YouTube feed right now or on the X formerly Twitter, he's putting up some amazing pictures. First of all, I thought we took some good pictures, the group took some good pictures, but Michael Kenny, you had the drone up several times, didn't you?
Yes, I legally flew it in different places and seen Greece from above. It was fabulous, just different optics, and it was great. We'll have more available later on, but yeah, it was fun just getting some of the different views. But yeah, Greece does not disappoint with its views. It's absolutely stunning.
My colleague Jane Duker, who is with me here in the previous part of the show, was going to go this summer because originally her son was going to be married in Greece. There were some changes because of some health-related issues with the family. But Mike, what I told her was, and this is what I would tell anyone about traveling to Greece, don't go in the summer because we had beautiful weather, but we all said, man, if it was 10 degrees warmer, we'd probably be miserable right now.
Yeah, I've even gone in the summer, and it was hot and crowded, and yeah, you could just tell we were on the cusp. It was like perfect temperatures, a little cool in the shade, warm in the sun. The crowds weren't too bad at most places. Santorini, as you know, it was pretty busy, but yeah, the shoulder seasons, they call it, the spring and the fall, are fabulous, and we always try to find those little perfect times to go to whatever country we're visiting, but yeah, summer would be really rough there.
I wanted you to just one moment here address the dynamic, because one of the other selling points, I think, of the trip is that we were on a smaller ship. And I took a picture. I don't know if you saw the picture that I posted one day. We were up next to a Carnival or I don't even know what it was, ginormous ships. And there was ours, Sue, you know, the bigger ships dwarfing it, which we were real happy with, because those things, and there's nothing wrong with people who like, you know, the floating cities, but this was a very different experience. And that was part of the point, wasn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it was. And everything we try to do wherever we're going, more small and intimate. And yeah, we'd be in some of those harbors just a few times that our ship looked like the dinghy for the other ones. And it's like it was unbelievable. And we got on this smaller ship and you're in and out so quick. And, you know, our cabins were by each other. We were within 15 seconds, not even. We were in the dining room. Well, it might take you 15 minutes on some of those bigger ships to get to that. So we could get you to the buffet as fast as we could, Mark.
That was important. You had not been to Greece in a while, but the history is just overwhelming. It really is.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I would love to go. I find this fascinating.
I don't know if I digested everything properly. No, I'm talking about the history, just because there was so much that was thrown at you, but I'm kind of inspired to, you know, to read a little bit more, and I think it'll sink in now that I've been back from the trip. And Mike, yesterday I you know, kind of pointed out that we had some really cool stories, like Ed and Barb, who were on the trip, who were celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. The actual anniversary was on Valentine's Day of this year. But while we were on the trip, and I can't remember if it was last, you know, Friday or Saturday, Barb brings up at our dinner that it was the 51st anniversary of the time that they met, and they met on a blind date.
Yeah, that what a great couple, Ed and Barbara. They were so much fun. They were... they were acting like it was their first year being married. What a special group. And it was fun to celebrate that with them. What a great couple.
They were inspirational. I kind of anointed Barb as the entertainment of the ship. All right, Michael Kenny, where are we going to go next? We got any ideas where we're going to take listeners next year?
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of fun. We, you know, mentioned Croatia. There's a few other little places, but hopefully we'll get that all tied up this summer and be able to announce it soon.
I'm very curious about here's where my head is, just so you know. I shoot straight with the audience. Croatia looks real interesting, and if we would do that, that would be on even like a smaller cruise liner, right?
Yeah, if we do that, I'm actually waiting to hear back on that. It would be 35 max people max on this. It's more like a smaller boat in
like
small little waters, but it'd be like 35 people. Yeah, like a yacht. It's what an experience. I've done that twice. So I'm always just looking for something a little bit different and something intimate to have with all the guests. And it'll be fabulous, whatever we do.
Well, and the other one that really does pique my curiosity is the, you know, the Amalfi Coast and Sicily and Italy, because I've been all over Italy. You were there with us in Italy in 2011. That's how I, you know, met you for the first time. But that's certainly on my list as well. So we'll figure something out. We'll share that news a little later this summer. But look, I want to thank you so much, because when I talked about the trip on the air, I pointed to you a lot because I knew how awesome you were, because we had traveled before. We went to Spain a couple of years ago. You knocked it out of the park at Defined Destinations. You can always find out more at defineddestinations.com. Are you settling in good with the family there back in Minnesota?
I had to reintroduce myself to my wife and kids, but I think things are going well now. So it's great. But again, I already miss all of you guys, and what a great group of people you attract. And you and Becky are the best.
Thank you, Mike Kenny. We'll talk soon. I appreciate coming on here tonight.
Thanks, Mark. Take
all right,
care.
That was great. He really is. He does put
He sounds so nice.
He's just got it together, you know, and he had to keep me in line a couple of times, which is good for sure. All right, I think I'm going to take a break. I have an audio cut of the day, but I have sort of one of those extended audio cut of the day segments, because there's some stuff that I didn't get to. Really interesting Charles Barkley audio on the trans sports issue that
I
you do
Chuck.
Not want to miss. Yeah, you're going to want to hear that. It's coming up. I feel like I have to catch up a little bit on audio cut of the day, because I missed so many, and there's some good audio that I've gathered that I have not shared. And we talked earlier this afternoon about Tashara Jones and her interview on the local NPR affiliate, which is just, it's probably the best comedy you're going to hear all week. But I want to start with this, because we had a little bit yesterday, 24 hours ago, we were talking about the issue in Colorado where they sent this bill to the governor's desk that doesn't even allow parents to be notified when their kids are changing what sex they think they are, or their, you know, their name. You know, if they have a name that you might have given to them when they were born, well, it's okay in Colorado when the governor signs this bill to hide whatever name your child under the age of 18 decides to take on. You as a parent don't have those rights anymore.
Pass this bill and history will not remember you as heroes. It will remember you as cowards who sold out the rights of the people for the approval of extremists.
It's an attack on parental rights. The state does not get to determine what's best for other people's children. The state is not the parent.
Disagreement is not abuse.
Yeah, you know, but they passed it. They passed it in Colorado. Here's one of the state reps.
This isn't about Charles wanting to be called Chuck. This is about Johnny wanting to be called Sally. I'm sick of hearing that argument. This is about nicknames. It's not what this is about.
Yeah, it's about something far more serious. And let me kind of piggyback into something here, since we're talking about Charles and Chuck. Charles Barkley said something that is fascinating. You're going to want to hear it. But I want to play you what, and I don't know who this woman is, but she was on, I guess she's leaving Around the Horn. Kate Fagan is her name. Around the Horn is a, used to be a very successful show. I used to watch Around the Horn, and pardon the interruption, years and years ago, I used to record those on VHS. I remember that show's been around so long. So this woman who's on the show Around the Horn, Kate Fagan, her last show yesterday, and then she takes this little parting shot about the trans issue.
Well, listen, being on this show has been a privilege and a platform, and I know it's my last time on it, and I want to say something worthy of that privilege and platform, and that is this, that trans kids deserve to play sports. Think about what you remember from your time playing sports. Like 99% of it is finding that jersey for the first time, your favorite number, community, joy, those high fives. It's that moment when you have a great play with a teammate. It's the feeling of belonging, and it does not know gender. And trans kids deserve that the same as everybody else does. And Tony, this space has, on Around the Horn, it's been about diversity and inclusion, lifting up new voices, because sports is joy and sports is humanity. And the more people who have that, the better. And Tony, I love you. So thanks for having me back
on. Well, you know, they hit the horn. That's what they do, because it's Around the Horn. So when you're out of time, but I think that they should have hit something that sounded a little bit more like this, because when she's talking her nonsense, that's just unbelievable. And they get to spread that crap on ESPN. Look, ESPN, they've been cowards. They have been cowards about this issue. Really, all the sports media has. And I've always asked myself that question. Why is it? Well, that's because they are so left-wing indoctrinated brainwashers. But listen, Sue, to what Charles Barkley.
Come on, Chuck.
Because one of the things that's been, you know, Riley Gaines has pointed this out. We've had Michelle Tafoya and others from some of these groups. You've not really had someone, and we still don't really, actively, that is a star in women's sports, whether it's tennis or another sport, come out and say, enough is enough. But here's Charles Barkley saying enough is enough.
I'm going to make this very simple for you, Dan. Men should not play sports against women. I'm not going to get into all the bullshit that's going on out here in the world today. You know, it's interesting. I always sit back and look at the stuff. And let me tell you something. I love gay people. I love transgender people. I'm against any form of discrimination, period. Because you can't say, if you are against, I love my gay friends and I love my transgender friends. But I'm not going to get into all this stuff that's going around. Men should not play sports against women. If anybody thinks that, I think they're stupid. I'm not, like I say, I support the gay community 100%. I support the transgender community 100%. But I do not, under any circumstances, under zero, think that men should play sports against women. And if anybody have a problem with that, they're going to have to get over it, because I'm not going to change.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe not the most eloquent way to put that, but he's right, and his gut check is right, and I have many gay friends. I don't believe I have any transgender friends. I don't really care what you do as an adult, but this is about kids, and that's what we've talked about. That's why Jamie Reed, the whistleblower here at WashU and Children's Hospital, that's why she continues to be a voice of reason in this. But what happens is, and this is where, you know, Chuck's going to find this out the hard way from all the activists that will protest him now, that he's talking about men playing against girls. They don't look at it that way. We've said this before. If you say you're a girl, if you identify as a female, well, then that's all that's needed. Nothing, science doesn't matter. You just have to say what you are.
Yeah, and unfortunately, biology has a lot to do with this, which is why, to begin with, there was Title IX. So we could have an even playing field for men and women.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think things have really headed in the right direction, but wow, you still have people like Kate Fagan going on ESPN spreading all that nonsense. I have something more official for Audio Cut of the Day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the Audio Cut of the Day.
All right, we talked about this, Sue, yesterday. I mentioned it because there was a story in the local paper. I had not heard the interview. I still haven't heard the entire interview, but we have some audio from the former mayor of St. Louis, who wants to put all the blame on her loss to pretty much blowout defeats.
Right. You know,
the only reason there was a second election is because you had to do it under the way that the city does these, where you have a runoff, right? But listen to our former mayor blame everyone but herself.
I think St. Louis needs to have a conversation with itself of why it no longer trusts Black women to lead. And I can't answer that for them. But there is, I would say, an unhealthy and unrealistic level of expectations when it comes to Black female leadership, not only in St. Louis, but, when we look across the country. My dad always told me, and then, there, you know, it's an old phrase that Black women have to work twice as hard just to get half as much. Well, I feel like we work five times as hard to get nothing in return. That's a serious conversation that I think that not only we need to have locally, but nationally as well.
Oh, my goodness.
It's complete denial. Here's the thing.
Complete denial.
You were elected regardless. Nobody cares what color or race you are. We don't care about any of that. What sex? We just want a good mayor, someone who can lead, take care of good basic services. That's what we want, and you did not deliver that.
So she goes on to talk about some things that happened nationally.
I would say that there is a reckoning that needs to happen, especially when it comes to the leadership of Black women in the Democratic Party and in the progressive movement. They want our votes, but they don't want our leadership. We need to have a serious conversation and a hard conversation as to why. 92% of African American women voted for Kamala Harris in 2024. But yet we saw not only with my race, but several races around the country where we were losing Black leadership at the local level. In that same cycle, we lost Sharon Western Broome in Baton Rouge. We lost London Breed in San Francisco. We're about to lose LaToya Cantrell in New Orleans,
Good.
Who had to experience many recall efforts to get her out of office. So there is a huge disconnect within the party about our vote versus our leadership.
And what would you want to see the St. Louis City Central Democratic Committee, the Missouri Democratic Party? I mean, what do you want them to do? What do you hope that these conversations lead to?
And that's kind of where I played the first bite. You know, I don't know who it was that did that interview. The only thing I've said about this local NPR station is I know and I follow Jason Rosenbaum, who seemingly is a pretty good political reporter, and he, you know, he gets things right certainly more often than not. But who's the person who did the interview? Are you kidding me?
I know.
Do you not? You have no. She's got zero self-awareness.
Well,
zero self-awareness.
Are you saying then that even though we elected you before, we've all suddenly turned racist?
Including Black people are all racist.
That makes no sense.
Of course
you were not
reelected
because you didn't do a good job.
Tashara, go away. We don't ever want to hear from you again. We really don't. And you know what? You put a competent African-American woman in, people
Great.
Will vote for them. Shut the F up. That's what I say. Have a great weekend, Sue.
See you, Mark.
Get more at 971talk.com.